As you know, this won't be any shock to all of you, but the Bible's under a lot of attack, isn't it? From a lot of people and for a lot of different reasons. And so I want to focus on one of the attacks that's been kind of hot and heavy in the last few years and a new response that Christians have. So I think this is exciting. This is something I came across about a year and a half ago, and we watched a DVD on it. In our apologetics class, I want to share it with you. So what's the attack? Well, let me start with a quotation here from the Da Vinci Code. If you haven't seen that before, that's a huge bestseller. I think it's now in the top 10 books of all time as far as sales goes. Just, it was a monster hit about 10 years ago. And unfortunately, some people read it and lost their faith. They walked away from Christianity because of a fiction book. Well, Dan Brown at the beginning, he says, basically, the characters are made up, but all of the manuscripts and all of the art and all of the history and all this stuff is true. Well, no, it's not. But this is the kind of stuff that went on in the Da Vinci Code. This is roughly in the middle of the book. We finally meet this character who is a quote-unquote expert on the New Testament times. And this is what he tells the people that are around him. Talking about the Council of Nicaea in the 300s AD, so roughly 300 years past the time of Jesus. At this gathering, he says, many aspects of Christianity were debated and voted upon. The date of Easter, the role of the bishops, the administration of sacraments, and of course the divinity of Jesus. Another character says, what? The divinity of Jesus? He says, my dear, until that moment in history, Jesus was viewed by his followers as a mortal prophet, a great and powerful man, but a man nonetheless, a mortal. And this character, other character says, not the Son of God? Right. Jesus was established as the Son of God. It was officially proposed and voted on by the Council of Nicaea.
Wow.
So.
Didn't read the Gospels.
Well, that's just one prong of the attack. Let me give you another one. Have you heard of a group called the Jesus Seminar? About every Christmas and every Easter, there's a group of scholars who get together. Now, keep in mind, these are really liberal scholars. They're just out on the fringe. But they get together, and the press likes talking to them because they always have some kind of challenging and interesting and frankly, subversive things to say about Christianity. So you'll see, Easter's nearly out, nearly here, and then there'll be a statement out by these people. And what they're going to say is this. They'll say, Jesus was sort of a countercultural hippie of his time period. And he was a nice guy, he was sharp, he was witty, but he was a man, he was a person just like the rest of us. And it was the church later on that said, you know, we need a Jesus that's a little more flashy, let's make him the Son of God. And so here we go again, right? Here's the second time we're hearing the same thing, that there was a Jesus of history, nice guy, misunderstood, put to death. And then there's the Jesus of faith that we all sing about and come here on Sundays to celebrate, that those are two different Jesuses. Well, they're not the only ones. Let me tell you one more that's going on right now. There's a book out by Bart Ehrman, and Bart Ehrman is the current hotshot when it comes to New Testament documents. He sells books by the case. He's probably the most successful person right now selling things about the New Testament to the general audience. The catch is he's an extreme skeptic. So he's got a new book out. It's called How Jesus Became God. Can you hear that in the title? How Jesus Became God. Here's his claim. The early church turned Christ into the Son of God, but Jesus himself never believed it, nor did his first followers. So now that's three, right? And that's just a sampling of what's going on out there. So there's attack after attack after attack from books and from groups of scholars and all, and they're all saying the same thing, that there are two Jesuses. There's the historical Jesus, nice guy, wasn't God, wasn't Son of God, never claimed such a thing. His early followers eventually, over time, turned him into what we worship today. So that's the charge. Here's the good news. There's a tremendous defense that we can mount against that. The usual defense is this, and this is the one that you're probably thinking I'm going to go this direction, and I'm not. It is a good defense. We can say, yes, but the Gospels are so close to the time of Jesus, and they present a Jesus who's God, a Jesus who dies for people's sins, and a Jesus, thank goodness, who was resurrected, and that's what we're celebrating this month. Can you think of any reason why skeptics may not be convinced by us offering Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John as the best defense against these kinds of attacks, like Bart Ehrman and others?
Well, it's in the Bible, and they don't take the Bible.
Well, that's true. There's a problem with just the Bible itself, isn't there? What else? How much time has gone by? Bill, what were you going to say?
I think it's fantastic, these skeptics. 2,000 years after Christ, and they're concerned about him. So we don't worry about Buddha or Mohammed. The fact that we're still worried about Jesus Christ proves he was there.
Yeah. That's true.
That's incredible.
Yeah, you're right. How much time has gone by, roughly, just in your heads, between the time of Jesus and the Gospels? What time period are we talking about?
Approximately 2,000 years.
Well, I mean, the Gospels, when they were written.
20 or 30 years, maybe?
Yeah, at least 30, maybe even 40. The skeptics are going to push it as far as they can toward the end of the first century. So can you see the problem that they may come up with? Well, how do we know what went on 30, 40, 50 years ago? Do you remember what you were doing 30 or 40, 50 years ago? You sat in a sermon back in 1955. Do you remember what the topic was? And people are going to say, well, maybe not. So that is the traditional defense, to say, but Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John are so close to the original. But the skeptics are going to say, well, close is a relative term, right? It's not all that close. It's 30 years, it's 40 years, several decades difference. Well, here's the good news. We're going to push that connection between what is said about Jesus much closer than the Gospels today. But we're not going to do it through the Gospels. We're going to use Paul. It's different, huh? I hadn't heard of this until a while ago. So this is going to be a lot of fun today. I hope you enjoy this. It's what's inside. I'm going to get rid of this. There we go. It's what's inside Paul's letters that makes it so exciting. Did you know that buried inside his letters, little nuggets are found in there that are either old Christian hymns from the very first people that gathered to celebrate Jesus, to what are called creeds. What's a creed, by the way? It's a statement of belief, isn't it? Modern businesses have creeds, and some people have personal creeds. Boy Scouts have a creed or whatever. So there are early, and we'll talk about that in a few minutes. There are really early creeds and hymns buried inside Paul's letters. And you say, well, I don't see the big deal about that, but we'll get to that in just a minute. Let me show you some examples of what I'm talking about. Did you see under number 3? I've given you some examples there. We don't have time to do them all, so I'm just going to take you to 3 or 4 here real quickly. Let's go to Philippians. By the way, I'm going to be using books of the Bible, books of Paul's letters, that even the skeptics agree that Paul wrote, right? I think we want to play in their ball field, right? Instead of arguing something that they're going to start disagreeing with us immediately. So we're going to use Corinthians especially. We're going to use Galatians. We're going to use Philippians. I'm actually going to mention 1 and 2 Timothy here in just a second. So we'll take the books that they give us, right? They say, yes, we think Paul wrote these things. So let's take a look at Philippians. Look in chapter 2. Do you see something that looks different in your Bible? It just simply is set apart and looks different than the rest of Philippians. Where do you see something starting that looks different? It looks like a poem. Yeah, do you see in verse 5 of chapter 2? And it goes all the way down. Do you see through verse 11? And then doesn't it go back to what looks like regular print again after that? That's not an accident. They're not doing that just to say, well, let's try something different. Scholars recognize that this is a very, very early hymn. And I always thought, how cool would that have been to go back in a time machine and sit there and to hear these early Christians sing what we're going to read today. I mean, we read it today, but can you imagine they actually sat around and sang this as a song to Jesus? Let's pick up in verse 5. It says, your attitude, he's talking to the Philippians, of course, should be the same as that of Christ Jesus, who being in very nature God, did not consider equality with God something to be grasped, but made himself nothing, taking the very nature of a servant, being made in human likeness. And being found in appearance as a man, he humbled himself and became obedient to death, even death on a cross. Therefore, God exalted him to the highest place and gave him the name that is above every name, that at the name of Jesus every knee should bow in heaven and on earth and under the earth, and every tongue confess that Jesus Christ is Lord, to the glory of God the Father. Can you hear those three things in there? The deity of Jesus, the death, and the resurrection. Where do you see those phrases that would let you know those are the big three that the church was singing about even back years and years earlier than Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John? Where do you see the deity being mentioned in here?
Verse 6.
Sure, in the very nature, God. This is God. That's just about as clear as it gets, isn't it?
Yeah.
Anything about the death of Jesus? That would be the second part. There it is. He humbled himself and became obedient to death, even death on a cross. Now, it doesn't use the term resurrection, does it? But do you see indirectly what it's talking about here as far as the resurrection goes too? What did God do?
He exalted
him, right? So that's the indirect way of saying there's the resurrection, right? He's honored Jesus for what Jesus went through and has exalted him to the heavens. So there we go. We have the deity, we have the death, we have the resurrection of Jesus. We're not talking dates yet, but this is an early, early reference to the things Jesus went through for us. Let's pick one more. Just keep going forward. A couple more pages will get you to Colossians. Colossians 1, first chapter. This time, let's do something that's not a hymn, so it won't look different. It's not going to look like a poem. It's going to be hidden here. It's nothing that will pop out at you. But Colossians 1, let's start in verse 15, and it goes to 18. This is an early creed, and we'll talk in a couple of minutes how we know it's a creed. But this is what the experts say is a creed that is incorporated, that Paul has put into this letter. He is the image, he speaking of Christ, is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn over all creation. For by him all things were created, things in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or powers or rulers or authorities. All things were created by him and for him. He is before all things, and in him all things hold together. And he is the head of the body, the church. He's the beginning and the firstborn from among the dead, so that in everything he might have the supremacy. Again, can you find those three things? Is there anything about the deity of Jesus here?
Image of God?
He's the image of God. If you want to see what God looks like, it's Jesus. We can't see God, but we can see Jesus. That's God. What about the death? Anything about the death? So we have the deity.
Firstborn.
Yes, it says he's the firstborn from among the dead. Now, actually, that wraps up both things there, doesn't it? He's the firstborn. He's the first one that's going to come out from the dead. We will follow, right? He's the first. He's the leader. But we'll have that same experience. And so we have all three things there, don't we? The deity of Jesus, he died, and he has come back. He's the firstborn from among the dead. And then he'll have supremacy. The beginning and the firstborn from among the dead. So we have all three things there as well. So those are just two. If you have some time this afternoon, if you want to, take a look. These are not all of the creeds and hymns, but there's some others that you could take the time to look at. So before we figure out what's going on as far as how far back we can push this, I gave you a timeline that I hope will be helpful. I just wish I'd been able to put the timeline this way, you know, going back and forth, but I'm not very computer literate anyway, and I messed around with it. I thought, oh, I give up. So now it runs from top to bottom, all right? So if you can just imagine rotating this thing, you know, halfway around, and you could read from there you go. Paul's got it. But let's do this. Let's lay out a timeline, and I think you'll see some interesting things here as we go through it. So, and we're going to use Galatians and 1 Corinthians, right? So that's, again, the ones the skeptics will give us. They'll say, yes, Paul wrote those. Okay, so all of these timeline dates are going to be dates that the skeptics agree on, all right? So we're not pushing something that Emmanuel Faith would go for or other conservative churches. This is what even the most outlandish skeptic is going to say, yes, we think this happened during this time period. So let's go through these. 30 AD would be the time of Jesus' death and resurrection. Now, there are a few scholars that push it to 33 AD. It's not going to matter. If you want to and you want to say 33, just push every date off 3 years. But most of the skeptics are going to be happy with 30 AD. It doesn't matter for our purposes here, okay? It's a nice round number anyway. So it works out really well here. 32 AD. Again, the skeptics agree Paul was probably converted within two years. Of the death of Jesus and the resurrection of Jesus. So that's going to be our starting point here in just a second. 35 AD, where are we coming up with 35 AD? Well, if you're staying in those little books that we did Philippians, we did Colossians, back up to Galatians. We're going to spend a little bit of time doing some things out of Galatians here. Paul's going to give us some timeline dates that we can put in along the way here. In Galatians 1, he talks about, let me give you a little background on this. Let's start in verse 15 of chapter 1, Galatians. But when God, who set me apart from birth and called me by his grace, was pleased to reveal his Son in me so that I might preach him among the Gentiles, I did not consult any man, nor did I go up to Jerusalem to see those who were apostles before I was, but I went immediately into Arabia and later returned to Damascus. So do you hear so far? He gets converted, and he doesn't go immediately to find out, do I have this straight? You know, he goes off. He separates himself, and he goes off in the desert, spends time alone there. But look at the next verse. What does he say? Then after how much time?
3 years.
3 years. Now, do you see where we are? We're at 35 AD. You can go back to the timeline here. He says, 35 AD. After 3 years, he says, I did go up to Jerusalem. And he says, I got acquainted with Peter and stayed with him 15 days. I saw none of the other apostles, only James, the Lord's brother. I like that, only James. So I'm thinking, oh, that'd be great, wouldn't it, to see James? The way he puts it, well, there's only James there. Whoa, the brother of Jesus. So, I mean, that's pretty big stuff. So we have Peter and we have James. Now, I don't know if you have a different variation of the Bible. That get acquainted is apparently is not very clear because it's not like, oh, hi, you're Peter. Good to talk to you. See you. How are the Padres doing? Right? It's none of this kind of chit-chat, get acquainted. Does yours say something different than get acquainted? Apparently not.
I got acquainted.
Get acquainted, okay. Well, if you go back to the Greek, and again, I'm just basing this off of what I've heard from experts, it's not me, but they say that get acquainted means sit down and thoroughly investigate something. Ask 100 questions, be very careful, understand really clearly what's going on. So can you imagine if you had 2 weeks with Peter, you're not going to talk weather. Who was Jesus? What did he do while he was on earth? Because remember, Paul was not around then. So he's going to ask those kinds of specific questions. What was that message? What did he mean when he said this? And so he's going to grill him. And he's going to say, well, this is what I heard. I spent 3 years thinking this all over. And Jesus appeared to me. Are we lined up there? And so Peter says, yeah, everything's fine. So that's 35 AD. All right, so we're back to the timeline here. Let's go to 49 AD. Where are we coming up with a new date here? Well, keep reading. We can just stay in Galatians. Let's pick up in chapter 2 of Galatians. 14 years later, I went up again. Okay, 14 years, right? So that's where I'm coming up with 49 AD. 14 years later, I went up again to Jerusalem, this time with Barnabas. I took Titus along also. I went in response to a revelation and set before them the gospel that I preach among the Gentiles. But I did this, why did he do this? I did this privately, to those who seemed to be leaders for fear that I was running or I had run my race in vain. So it's kind of funny, isn't it? But in a way, he's been out there, he's been, you know, hammering on doors, he's been showing up at synagogues, he's been chased out of cities. All this time has gone by and he's stopped and he's, I guess, has a little time and he's saying, is this what I'm supposed to be doing? I just want to make sure, right? I don't want to be saying something different to the Gentiles. And so he comes back to Jerusalem again, 49 AD, sits down. And now who's he with? Well, let's jump ahead here a little bit, go to verse 6. As for those who seem to be important, we'll get to that in just a second, who they are. He says, whatever they were makes no difference to me. God does not judge by external appearance. Here's the key part. Those men, we'll find out who in just a second, those men added what?
Nothing.
Nothing to what he said. Paul says, here's what I'm preaching. Jesus crucified, Jesus resurrected, Jesus as the Savior of the world. How am I doing, guys? And they said, that's it. That's what we're preaching. We haven't seen you for years. But that's right on. We're doing it here. You're doing it there. God bless you. Keep going. Now, who are these people? Are they people that you would trust? Well, drop down to verse 9. James, Peter, and John gave me and Barnabas the right hand of fellowship. James, Peter, and John, pretty heavy hitters there, huh? Like to have those in your lineup? All right? Big three there. So they all have said, these are the people that are that we would trust today. And they said, you're doing exactly the right thing. All of your letters, all of your comments are what we would want too. Tom?
Yeah, without getting off on a bunny trail, there was a major confrontation between Paul and the apostles. And how would, we've got these liberals and so forth, How would we deal with that?
Yeah, that's in Acts 15, the church, the first church council. Well, the message of Jesus was the same. It was, what do we do about it? Do we follow Jesus and drag Judaism with us? Right, and that was the argument, or that was the split. And so they hammered it out. And they decide, we're not going to put a bunch of impediments to the Gentiles, right? They're not going to have to become Jews. That's a huge chapter of the Bible, isn't it? I mean, that's really important. It's really answering the question, what is Christianity? Is it a sidebar to Judaism? Is it just a continuation of Judaism? Or is it actually, are we going to split off and actually become a separate religion? And so basically they said it's going to be a new religion. So I don't think that's an argument over what Jesus was saying. It's how Jewish do we want to make this new faith? How much do we take with us? I mean, Jesus said it was a new covenant anyway. And so Paul's preaching that as well. Does that help? Do you think that?
Yeah, I've
never heard any
skeptics from the other side where they might try to come in and water down or dilute.
Yeah, I've never heard any skeptical remark or any disparagement of that. So I think we're okay as far as that goes. You're laughing. All right, so there we are. We're now at 49 AD, right back to that timeline. By 51, Paul is in Corinth. He's setting up a church. He's preaching to the Corinthians. And now we can pick up at 55 AD. Paul writes the letter to the Corinthians to remind them of things that he initially had set up and trying to make sure they're staying on the straight and narrow. And if you know anything about the Corinthians, Paul's always having to do this because the Corinthians are just going crazy. He says, you're doing what? No, 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 that's not what I told you about. And he's having to write letters. Quit doing this and quit having this kind of person. Quit treating the Lord's Supper this way. But that was because he was there in 51. Now he's writing the Corinthians letters in 55 AD. We'll cover especially 1 Corinthians 15 is a biggie when it comes to these creeds. So we'll come back to that in just a second. Well, look at the timeline now. Again, remember, these are going to be the critics or the liberal skeptics who are going to push Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John way off toward the end of the first century. So I don't think, I don't know about you, but I think these were all written much earlier. Just to me, one hint is that there's no mention of the temple coming down. There's no mention of the Romans coming in. There's no mention of any of these big events. Jesus predicted the temple was going to come down. Now, if you're going to write one of the Gospels and you wrote it after 70 AD, wouldn't you say, wow, the temple's down. That's what Jesus said. Let's put that in the Gospels, right? It makes him look like a super prophet. Yeah. Instead, you have him making the prophecy in the end. So I think there are more reasons than that we don't need to get into today, but I think there's plenty of reasons to push the Gospels the other way, push them a little bit closer to the time of Jesus. But remember, today we're going to let the skeptics have their say. So they're going to say probably Mark was written first, and they're going to push it out to 70 AD. Now notice what we're talking about, 40 years since the time of Jesus. And then they say Matthew. So when you have your New Testament, it's probably not in the time order that the four Gospels were written. Although people do think John was the tail end of the Gospel writing. But that's almost 100 AD. So you think, wow, you know, 65 years later, who's going to remember this kind of stuff? Well, so now the big question is going to be, where can we put the creeds on this time scale, right? Do we put it somewhere like in the 40s or 50s when Paul wrote? Well, that's better than Mark, but not by a whole lot. Well, here's the good news. We're going to be able to slam those things really, really close to the time of Jesus. So let's take a look. Can we go to 1 Corinthians 15? This is the one we're going to hang our hats on today. Let me start it actually in verse 1. I know I put down verse 3 there for you, but this will give us a little background. Paul's talking here, and he says, now, brothers, I want to remind you of the gospel I preached to you. Right? So this is the point of his letter. I want to remind you, he says, of the gospel, which you received and on which you have taken your stand. By this gospel you're saved, if you hold firmly to the word I preached to you, otherwise you've believed in vain. Here it comes. This next verse is going to start another one of those little nuggets that's found in Paul's letters. This is an early creed. How do we know? Well, look how it starts. For what I received, I passed on to you as of first importance, colon. Okay, so let's stop there for a second, because a colon makes you stop anyway, right? There's something coming up, and that's a good breaking point. So he says, what I received, I passed on to you. That's rabbi language, right? In the New Testament, that was rabbi language, meaning I received something holy and so important that I want to pass it along to you. It doesn't say I came up with this, right? That's not the language you use if you say I created this and I'm going to give it with you. It says important people in the past, people I trust, people that are holy, people that I vouch for, gave me something so important I'm passing it along to you. So do you see that kind of language suggests this is earlier than what Paul is? Does that make sense? So let's see what this early message is. Here we go. That Christ died for our sins, according to the Scriptures. That He was buried. That He was raised on the third day, according to the Scriptures. And that He appeared to Peter, and then to the 12. After that, He appeared to more than 500 of the brothers at the same time, most of whom are still living, though some have fallen asleep. Then He appeared to James, then to all the apostles, and last of all, He appeared to me also as to one abnormally born. Now, is that the message that we think we are carrying to the community? Isn't that what we believe? Jesus, let's go through it again. He died for our sins. He was buried. And then He was raised. That's the big message of Christ. That's what we're going to celebrate really soon, right, with Easter. This is it. It's just in this little condensed package here. Now, scholars have looked at this, and they said it doesn't sound like Paul. It's not Paul. It's very, very old. It sounds like right around the time of Jesus. For example, I bet on your Bible where it says Peter, where it says He appeared to Peter, do you have a little raised number or letter? Cephas. Well, who's Cephas? Cephas is the old name for Peter, right? That's the name that Peter would have been known by in the time of Peter. Right? So it's Aramaic. There's lots of Aramaic. The old language that Jesus knew is just scattered through this. It's not Paul's language. So that's the takeaway from this. This is not Paul creating this thing. This is Paul being given this thing. In other words, he's heard it before and he's passing it along. So now the question is, all right, so here we go. Here's an old creed, and this creed just sums up everything we believe, especially at the time of Easter and all. How far back do we take this? Well, you see your timeline? Right, you got the timeline there? The timeline for the Jesus Seminar, these are the liberals. They say these creeds that we were reading today, including this First Corinthian creed, goes back before, look at your timeline, before the conversion of Paul. Before the conversion of Paul. What are we talking about? Within 2 years of the death and resurrection of Jesus. There are even, this is the thing that really lit my eyes up, there are some scholars who think these creeds, these hymns, were started the fall of the year that Jesus died. That's putting you within a year, maybe within a few months. I mean, can you imagine if you're somebody who really believes you've seen something, you've experienced this, you've seen the risen Lord, you're going to create something powerful, aren't you, to remember that and put it all together and pass it along, because you're not going to say, oh, another day. You're going to say, no, this was huge. This changed my life. And so these things may have been created within just a few months of the death and resurrection of Jesus. So again, look at the timeline. We've got Mark sitting out there. Even if we were to early date Mark, maybe 50s at the best, but give the critics what they want, 70 or so, we've just shoved it all the way down to 30 AD. Is that better or what? Yeah, that's a whole lot better.
Yeah.
So why is this important, right? Let's spend just a second here under number 6. Why is this important? Well, I wrote something up here that I thought encapsulates what we've been talking about today. It's the best message at the best time by the best people. Let's break that down for just a minute. What's the best message? What are we going to be talking about this Easter?
The resurrection.
Yes, Jesus lived. Jesus was God, so His death and His resurrection mean something. Because He's God, He can save us, right? It's not just something we look at and say, gee, that's symbolic for me. When I get through tough times, I'll use this Jesus of mythology to kind of help me get through my tough times. The resurrection is just symbolic. No, we don't say that. We say there was a real person in real history testified by these creeds who came, lived, died for us as God, and therefore, because of His resurrection, that's our future as well. It's a great future, huh? Especially with some of the things you were praying for today, all the troubles that people have, physical ailments and things like that. So it's the best message. Why is it the best time?
No,
Now, time meaning as, you know, as close as you can get to the original. Obviously, the closer is always better, isn't it, for any kind of statement by somebody if it's an eyewitness? Is this better than Mark? Yeah, this is the best time, meaning it's right back there at the time of Jesus. So these hymns that you encounter and these creeds are back at the time of Jesus. This is not some kind of later mythologizing that takes place over time. This is not the Council of Nicaea. This is not the early church saying, let's kind of jazz up Jesus a little bit here and turn him into God. That's not the case at all. It's back. That's what the people back then were saying. Question back there?
Talk about the timeline here from 30 AD to 95 AD with the Jesus seminar. Okay, using their analogy, that's 65 years. But there's eyewitness after eyewitness after eyewitness after eyewitness with documentation, yet they accept the writings of Aristotle and Socrates, to which there was no documentation for over 2,000 years.
Right. Yeah, it's an unfair standard that the Bible's held up to. We don't have anything from Plato for hundreds of years. We don't have anything from Homer for hundreds of years. And then we have a limited number of copies, whereas the Bible has a ton of copies. It's back, like we said here, pretty close. I think it's really close. It's far closer than any other ancient literature.
These people, Matthew, Mark, everybody but John, died a horrible martyr's death. Now, I don't know about you, but if somebody started torturing me about my beliefs, I might waver a bit. They didn't.
Well, you would, and that's what I want to get to as far as by the best people. I'll get there in just a second. Shoot, there's something else I was going to say in response to what you're saying. He was saying, you know, there is this gap, right? A little bit of a gap, and it's a far better gap than you have for other literature. Here's the other good thing. That gap is not the case of people sat around and somebody after 50 years said, what was it that Jesus said? Let's go find out. They had what was called oral tradition, right? The rabbis, their job was to teach their students, and that student's job was to memorize what the rabbi said. And they could memorize so much stuff that we can't memorize today. We've lost our ability to memorize. Right? They have to take a 7-digit phone number for us and turn it into 3 and 4, right? Because you can't remember 7, but you can maybe remember 3 and 4. I can't remember that. I had to tape my number for my cell phone on the back of my cell phone. People say, what's your number? I don't know. You know, because we just don't remember things. But for year after year, they'd memorize what Jesus said. He taught for 3 years, for heaven's sakes. He probably spoke the same thing more than once. And so that was their job. Those 12 people sat there and they absorbed it. So oral tradition in the Jewish culture was huge. And so even after 20, 30, 40 years, that stuff was locked up here. I bet there's things you memorize when you're 10, 15 years old. It's still there. It is for me. Sometimes I don't want it to be there, but you know, it's like stupid old songs or whatever, but they're there. And so you know that was the case. Anyway, so here's the third part of that little statement. Best message, best... Yes?
I have a question. Where were these documents put? I mean, were they clay tablets stuffed in a corner?
It was papyrus.
What?
Papyrus. You know, you take reeds and you slam them together and smash them enough. Papyrus. And then you'd print on the papyrus. If you had enough money later on, you got parchment. But right now, you know, it's papyrus. Here's the catch.
Where did they put them?
Where did they store them?
I have no idea where they stored them, but here's the catch. The papyrus is like really cheap, crummy pulp paper that you had from old novels. You notice how they kind of crumble and fall apart after they get yellowish, and then pretty soon you can hardly handle them. They just fall apart. Well, that's what happened to the originals. That's why we don't have any original Homer, we don't have any original Aristotle, and we don't have any of the original Gospels and Paul's letters. They're gone. They're dust. But that's not a problem because of the careful copying, because of the oral tradition and all. Homer.
Homer.
In his own mind.
Material that the Dead Sea Scrolls were in?
Right, right.
Okay, they were rolled up and put into jars and put into caves so that they would keep, and they did.
They did, yeah. But again, they have to handle them really carefully because they're near crumbling right now.
The Dead Sea Scrolls were engraved on copper, I believe.
I don't think so. I think they're parchment.
Parchment?
Yeah. Or papyrus, sorry. I think they're papyrus.
Yeah.
But it had to be, you know, the right environment, that dry weather and things like that. Tom?
The exciting thing about this is it's all tied up in a bow because Paul says, from the scriptures. So now it goes back to the scriptures.
Yes.
When it was prophesied. Mm-hmm.
Right.
And he's... You talk about the oral tradition. All he's doing is just bringing that forth.
That's right. That's right. So to me, one more time, best message, best time. And then the third part, the best people. I mean, think about it again, one more time. Peter and James and John. And just what you were talking about. These people met death. They didn't change their statement. They didn't change their testimony. Now, if it was us here making up a religion, and then we got under torture like you were talking about, we'd probably really quickly say, hey, I was just kidding. And you see these suicide bombers that go and smash into you know, big buildings and all, but they're dying for their faith, but they don't know if it's true or not. Matthew and Mark and all these disciples and all, they went to their death, and they were the ones that could have known whether it was a lie or not, right? But they were willing to die for this. Some people die, but they don't know if it's true or not. Right? I'm not going to die if I know it's false. Well, why would you do that? Why would all of them do that? And they did. They all stuck it out to the very end. So there's no myth, right? There's no myth at all there. So let's go to 6b. Here's another thing that we have discovered today, I hope, is that the deity, the death, and the resurrection, the big three about Jesus, were there from the beginning of Christianity. This is not something that happened after 300 years, a council of Nicaea saying, well, let's see, do you think Jesus was God? Let's try that out. Anybody want to vote for that? Okay, okay, we got enough votes, we'll make him deity. No, this is 300 years earlier. The earliest Christians are saying he is God. He came for us, he died for us, and he, thank goodness he was resurrected, and we will follow that as well. Yes?
I got another question. With all these people writing documents, there doesn't seem to be any mention of the destruction of Jerusalem.
Right.
And that was at what, 30?
70.
70.
Right.
So there's 70 years, and yet there's no data. Well, that's not true. There's no one in sight that is reporting anything about
that's right.
About the
death. Even if
that's
you
a big event.
Even if you take the book of Acts, Acts doesn't talk about it, and at the end of Acts, guess who's still alive? Paul. He dies about 65 AD. So you can kind of backdate Acts, I think, and then Acts is the second book by Luke. You can backdate Luke, and Luke is not the first gospel. You can backdate Mark. So all of a sudden, you're pushed back, I think, into the 50s. Maybe even late 40s. Apparently there's a scrap. It's just a rumor floating around. There's a scrap of Mark that can be dated back to about 50 or 55 AD. If that's true, that blows this whole skeptical thing out of the water as far as, oh, those Gospels all were at the end of the first century. So we'll see how that turns out. And then the third thing under letter C is we can trust the Gospels. Aren't they giving the same message? The deity, the death, the resurrection of Jesus. So we can still trust the gospel. So I don't want you to think I'm throwing those out for us to use as a defense. I'm just saying Paul's information, Paul's creeds, take us so much further back. And they echo exactly what the gospels were preaching. We can trust the gospels, we can trust these creeds. So that's good news, I think, especially this time of Easter. Jim, you want me to close, or is there anything else?
My comment is that all of these skeptics want to be skeptics because they, going back to the earlier verses we were talking about, every knee shall bow, every tongue confess. They don't want to do that.
Yeah, I think it's a heart issue, don't you? It's not an intellectual issue. The Bible's held up to such a different standard than everything else because the Bible has more at stake, doesn't it? There's more required of that than Jane Eyre. Or the Iliad or the Odyssey, right? The Iliad or the Odyssey is not going to change your eternal destiny. But the Bible's saying, you got to believe this.